There's good news in education when it comes to STEM fields. There has been a dramatic increase in the number of women who are going into STEM. Some of that certainly can be attributed to recruiting of colleges and universities, programs to try and encourage girls to go into STEM in higher education, even scholarships that have been provided to girls and young women to go into STEM ed. But there are those who say that having specifically gender-targeted approaches like that are discriminatory against male students. And they say that it, in fact, violates Title IX, the gender equity provision in federal law. With us to talk about how this all plays out is Everett Bartlett, president of the Stop Abusive and Violent Environments Title IX Equity Project. They filed administrative complaints against the Civil Rights Office with the Department of Education. Mr. Bartlett, thank you for being with us. Why do you think that these STEM, as well as other areas of recruitment for women, run afoul of Title IX?
Yeah, well, great question, and it's a fair question. So let's take a step backwards. We've found over the past 40 years, there's really been a remarkable transformation in higher education. In 1981, the number of male and female students enrolled in college was equal. But since 1981, that percentage of male students has steadily fallen and is now in only 40%. So our Title IX Equity Project looked at the sex-specific scholarships at the largest universities all around the country, and we found a shocking disparity. In every state that we looked at, the number of female-specific scholarships, and they're not just STEM, there are many other issues and fields they cover, but these female-specific scholarships vastly outnumber the scholarships for male students. Sadly, California was among the worst of the states that we reviewed. If we look at the largest California colleges, and I can give you the names if you want, they offer a total of 4 scholarship programs for men compared to 117 scholarships only for female students. That's almost a 30-fold disparity. So when male students, male enrollments are plummeting, a 30-fold disparity that favors females doesn't quite make sense.
In the case of STEM specifically, though, we've got science, technology, engineering, math, where women have historically been severely underrepresented. Now, we're starting to see shifts in that, given fields of science where we're seeing many more women come into that. So you could argue that these programs would at least been part of that success. Why would it be wrong to continue these specifically for STEM when you are trying to address what's a historic underrepresentation in the field?
Well, so first of all, there is no female underrepresentation in the STEM fields, at least according to the Council of Graduate Schools. This is their graduate school enrollment in 2017. They report it's 51% female, 49% male. Now, if you start, drilling down and looking at specific areas like engineering or like mathematics, yes, you do see underrepresentation of females. But if we're going to be fair about this, why are we not also talking about the historic underrepresentation of males in areas like public administration, education, nursing, psychology? The list goes on and on and on, and the male underrepresentation in those fields is actually greater than the female underrepresentation in, say, mathematics and computer sciences.
Everett Bartlett, thank you for being with us. I appreciate you laying out the position of your organization called the Save Title IX Equity Project. He's president of the group, which filed administrative complaints with the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights. My question for you as an AirTalk listener is, do you think that it is fair for schools to offer special programs, scholarship, what are female student-centric or prospective student female-centric ways of trying to get girls and young women into STEM? Does it make sense that they do this sort of a recruitment effort or in targeting one specific gender? Is that discriminatory? Does it run afoul of Title IX? And, you know, those are sort of two separate questions. The one is it ethically right to do it? Secondly, is it legal to do it under the Title IX federal regulations? 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Maybe you're someone who's benefited from what is a woman-centric scholarship or outreach or specialized program, or maybe you felt excluded. You're a man going into STEM and you felt that there's been a reverse discrimination. 866-893-KPECC. We'll continue our conversation with University of Laverne law professor Diane Klein. We'll also talk with a professor at the Western New England University School of Law, Erin Bouzouvis. We'll hear what she has to say about this as well and where the legalities of Title IX come down on this. We'll continue in 1 minute. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Very good to have you with us as we talk about challenges to colleges and universities offering women-centric scholarship and programs to increase representation in STEM fields of education. Like to hear your thoughts about that at 866-893-KPECC. With us from the University of Laverne, where she's professor of law and specializes in civil rights, education law, and anti-discrimination law, Diane Klein. Professor, good to have you with us.
It's good to be here, Larry.
So, setting aside sort of whether this is a good thing or not generally, to try and recruit more women into STEM education, what do you think Title IX says about this? Is it potentially discriminatory to do this?
Well, the goal of Title IX when it was first enacted was to eliminate discrimination on the basis of sex in the educational setting, from the primary setting on up through the university, and specifically the kind of discrimination that it had in mind was discrimination against women, not just discrimination on the basis of sex more generally, but ways in which women had been systematically excluded from equal educational opportunities in the United States. And in addition to Title IX itself, there are federal regulations that implement laws of this type. And in the Code of Federal Regulations used to implement Title IX is a specific permission for the use of affirmative action to achieve this goal. So it is not simply that Title IX requires the removal of barriers, right? For example, if a program did not admit women, did not consider applications from women, they would not be allowed to do that. The Code of Federal Regulations in this area specifically permits institutions to use affirmative action to take appropriate remedial steps to eliminate the effects of any discrimination which resulted or may have resulted from adherence to their prior policies and practices, even if they have not been found to be in violation by the Department of Education, Department of Justice, Office of Civil Rights, or any other body. Institutions are allowed to do this affirmatively and at their own initiative. And what I find from opponents of affirmative action in this area, as in many areas, is a failure to understand what seems to some of us like pretty basic principles of cause and effect. to say that we don't need affirmative action here because statistics about women's participation in some of these fields have markedly improved in recent decades, which is certainly true, although it's a partial picture, is like saying that because seatbelts have so reduced highway fatalities, we don't need to use seatbelts anymore.
So you're saying the reason that there are many more women working in STEM is because of programs like what these universities are doing?
Yes, a variety of innovative programs intended to not merely reduce barriers, but what programs found was just because they would admit women didn't mean that women showed up in the kinds of numbers that would suggest that real substantive equality of opportunity existed in those fields. That's what these scholarships, special programs, and so on are all designed to accomplish in a highly targeted and institution-specific way.
We're talking with University of Laverne Law Professor Diane Klein, also with us from Western New England University, where she's Professor of Law, Erin Bezuvis. Professor, thank you so much for joining us, given Title IX is one of your specialties. Be interested to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think it's clear how Title IX would apply here?
Well, it's my pleasure to talk to you, Larry, and to your listeners, and I agree with very much of what Professor Klein has already said, but I think that another provision of the regulations kind of create a bit of a gray area with respect to just scholarships in particular, because there is a specific regulatory provision that talks about non-discrimination in terms of financial assistance that a university makes available to its students. And while it does permit specific sex-specific scholarships in certain circumstances, most sort of quintessentially when someone has left it in their will or created a trust or something to fund a scholarship at a particular university, that there can be sex-restricted scholarships in that instance as long as the overall impact of the school's scholarship program is, quote, not, you know, non-discriminatory or doesn't create a discrimination on the basis of sex. And so, I mean, this hasn't been a very scrutinized area of Title IX's application to the practices of colleges and universities. And there's not a lot to go on to predict whether the Department of Education would be more persuaded by the general permissivity of affirmative action that's set out in one part of the regulations, or whether it would be looking, at least with respect to scholarships, to really zero in on this particular provision. If it's the latter, as I suspect it might be, if the Department of Education is looking to apply this particular provision, there's also some questions about how exactly this provision applies. What does it mean to say that your overall scholarship program doesn't discriminate on the basis of sex? I can say that there are very smart lawyers out there who work in higher education who have recommended as a best practice that if you have some sex-segregated scholarships, sex-specific scholarships, that you make sure that those themselves are equal, because that creates a very easy accounting. You can point to a similar number of dollars available to both men and women in a restricted fashion. But it's also possible to imagine that as long as the overall scholarship, the impact of your scholarship program is equitable, then it would be okay, even if there is some emphasis on specific sex-restricted scholarships for women.
Well, and I wonder how, if at all, outcome factors in here. Everett Bartlett of Save Title IX Equity Project, which has filed these complaints against the women-centric scholarships and outreach, he was citing the fact that now in graduate schools, the majority of STEM graduate students are women by a slight majority. So his argument is, well, we're already seeing in graduate school the effect of more women and it making it more equitable. So then why do you need to do women-centric outreach, scholarships, et cetera, if we're already seeing that? Professor Klein's point is, well, the reason you see that is because of these sorts of extra efforts to try and recruit and help women you get into graduate school in this field and to go into the workforce. So, Professor Bezuvis, does this factor into it? And is there sort of a threshold point where you say mission accomplished?
Well, I definitely agree with Professor Klein's point that we are reaping the benefit of these kinds of programs that have been implemented and have been practiced and have not been challenged for decades. At the same time, I'm not sure how that factors into the legal analysis under Title IX. I don't really see a way for that to enter into the calculation of whether they're strictly legal under the regulations as written. I think that if I could write my own outcome for this debate that we're having, it would be that the Department of Education takes the opportunity of these complaints to kind of update and clarify exactly what is permitted going forward. And if I were writing that policy, I would continue to permit sex-specific scholarships in order to promote students' access to academic disciplines and occupations where they're underrepresented. And I agree with Mr. Bartlett that there should be equal attention paid to disciplines and professions where men are underrepresented as well. So if it were up to me, I would create a policy that would allow for those both to happen as long as there was a demonstrated need for sex-restricted scholarships and that overall there was a similar effort to kind of close gaps in professions that are segregated both in favor of women and in favor of men.
See, I love that you did that. You just said if you were in charge, I love that, how you think this could be resolved. Thank you for doing that. Let's take a listener call. This is from Nicole in Santa Monica. You're on Air Talk.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to say that I agree with your last speaker that I think that there are still some real deficits in the STEM professions that justify the types of scholarships that we're seeing. And even if we have women participating in comparable numbers to men in graduate programs, there are still real impacts that you're seeing out in the professions. And so encouraging more women through these types of scholarships, I think, do promote the equitable goals of Title IX. And I think, it would be an excellent opportunity for the Department of Education to clarify them. And I do think, comparing right now male-only scholarships to female-only scholarships, which appears to be what Mr. Bartlett did, is somewhat misleading because it doesn't take into account the number of gender-blind scholarships that go to men, which build in issues of implicit bias and systemic privilege. And
well, that would be interesting to know, Nicole, wouldn't it, for gender-blind. What is the gender breakdown on the awards of those scholarships?
Yep. And I don't think that we can really talk about equity until we have those numbers as well.
All right. Nicole, I appreciate it. Very good points that you raised. Let's talk with Sam in Temple City. You're on Air Talk.
Hey, Larry. So I'm just offering a perspective as an engineer who's transitioning to nursing. So a male field or a typically dominated male field to a female field. And I just don't see kind of the inequity that your first guest was talking about in terms of, males and females in female fields. If a male wants to go into a kind of a female dominated field like nursing or public admission, I don't see the barrier, let's say, as if a female wanted to go into engineering. I think it's far harder for females. I think we had maybe three females in, my mechanics class as an undergrad. It's just far easier for males to transition.
Well, and so what are the reasons based on your observations that is? Is it because the culture of engineering is just not as open to accepting women and that nursing, for example, has a more welcoming, open culture to men to join it? Or is it the educational process leading up to that? What have you seen?
I think that's part of it. I know that the nursing field does welcome men. I just think, that you are right in the sense that, I've worked in the industry as well as an engineer, and it is less welcoming to women. That's just the way it is.
All right. Sam, I appreciate and wish you the best of luck as you change professions to become a nurse. I do want to thank our guests for taking part in the conversation, talking about this challenge to women-specific scholarships and outreach programs, particularly in STEM fields that colleges and universities have undertaken in recent years. We had Diane Klein, University of Laverne Law Professor, Aaron Bazouvis, Western New England University Law Professor, and Everett Bartlett, President of Save Title IX Equity Project, which has filed the complaints under Title IX against these schools offering women-specific scholarships and outreach for STEM, as well as other fields. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. So good to have you with us. Coming up on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, actor Stephen Root, who plays a handler to a hitman in the HBO series Barry, just received his first Emmy nomination after appearing in nearly 800 TV episodes and 100 films. Stephen Root, no problem staying employed as an actor. We'll hear from him on Fresh Air coming up at noon. We'll be back right after a live update from Julie Slater.